Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hello, I'm Jay Crame. I am the editor of the Eagles Beak, a Palace fan site, and I'm also co-host and producer of a local community radio show called The Meridian Sports Show. So you can get us on Twitter at The Meridian SS or at The Eagles Beak.
Hi, my name is John McKenzie. I'm the founder of All Stats Aren't We, which is a Leeds United fan media channel, which focuses on the stats and the tactics of all things Leeds United. And you can find us at All Stats Aren't We on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. We might not all be in the best of spirits given how our matches went this weekend, but we'll try to power on nonetheless. I wanted to start off by talking about a club who is in even worse shape than any of us right now. Norwich were pretty highly praised for their transfer window. I think Dave and I both gave them either B pluses or A's for their transfer window. There was a lot of talk about Daniel Farke coming back to the Premier League, having obviously been up 2 years ago, and the fact that they'd already have that Premier League experience, they could get off to a better start. Not been the case to date. 0 points and already a minus 12 goal difference just 5 games into the season. I guess we'll just start by asking you guys, are you surprised by how much they've struggled thus far, given those things that I've mentioned?
Probably not. I think they've been dealt a rough hand with the fixtures, to be quite honest with you. They've had a pretty rough set of fixtures to kick off a season back in the Premier League. I think after 10 games, you could probably tell a little bit more in terms of, you know, they may have faced a few teams which are at their level, but obviously they lost to Watford at the weekend. But I think that's really, you know, off the back of the tough fixtures they've had. I do think that they sold their soul a little bit by selling Buendia. I don't know what the situation was, whether he wanted to go or whatever, but I thought it was a massive part of their promotion season, and selling a player of that calibre is going to hit any team, I think. So I do believe that, you know, they dropped one there a little bit. In terms of bringing the players in, players have got settled. They've had quite a high turnover. And, yeah, you'd think that they'd have a bit more nous coming back to Premier League. But I think these days, teams coming to the Premier League, there's always going to be the odd one or two that get through a net and survive, you know, a couple of seasons or maybe longer. But I think it's getting harder and harder to survive in the Premier League now. I think Norwich are one of those teams that are just bouncing between the two divisions, really. A bit like West Brom, a bit like Fulham. Yeah, there's a few teams you could say the very same for, really. I mean, Fulham put up a good fight. They had a terrible start last season and actually, you know, got their sea legs a little bit. And the second half of the season, they were very good. And actually, if they had a bit more luck, they may well have survived last season. But yeah, you could say the same for Norwich, but I think it's early days. They've been dealt a rough hand with the fixtures, had some really tough fixtures against, you know, the big sides. And I think the loss against Watford was probably just a hangover from that, really. But they do need to start getting some points on the board and getting some goals, really, to kind of give them a bit of confidence and build from that. Was it 5 games in? It's a tough start. You know, let's face it, they would have hoped to have had something by now. But I would look at them again after 10 games. You know, they can't get too far adrift. But I think they're just one of these sides that is just going to, you know, they're not a side which is renowned for having a lot of money and spending big money. That's no offence to Norwich at all. They cut their cloth accordingly, which a lot of football clubs have to these days, particularly when you go down to the Championship. I think a lot of the clubs in the Premier League and fans in the Premier League don't appreciate that. You know, there's a lot of clubs that actually do bounce between the divisions, and, you know, luckily my team haven't for some time, which, you know, we used to be the very same, you know, every other season. But the Premier League is a very different beast now. It really is. So I think it's getting harder and harder for teams to do it.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Jay's saying there in conclusion there, that the Premier League is a different beast to what we've expected. And I think what we're seeing with clubs like Norwich is that they are thinking smart about the way that they approach the league and their general place within football. So their director of football, Stuart Webber, who is often talked about, is following some protocol that they call the infinite game, which is, I think, a pretty smart way of approaching things. Obviously, their ownership is Dina Smith and her husband, so this isn't a corporate-backed club. This is just a small local club that's being run by two people who I guess never anticipated being the owners of that club, and they decided that the best thing they could do is approach the game and the task of running a football club by adopting sort of smart practices, and that's what they're doing. And so they consider themselves to be managing one of the top 25 clubs in the UK. Now, obviously, the Premier League has only 20 clubs in it, and so that means that at times Norwich will end up falling out of the Premier League, and they are aware of that and they admit that. And I think it's a smart way of running things. The fact is that I guess Norwich are used to dropping down and coming back up, and the big question for them is, are we in a good position when we drop out of the Premier League to be able to get back into it after a season in the Championship? And I think that's what they'll be looking at. That's what they'll be focusing on. That's what they'll be working on. So, yes, obviously, when you get into the Premier League and you start the way that they have done, it's not pleasant for the fans. And no fan really wants to see their club necessarily being run in a way that will see them bomb out of the league. But I think, as Jay said, that ability to sort of move in between the two divisions for a few seasons to just solid yourself up has worked for his club, Crystal Palace. And I think that's what Norwich are looking for in the long run. They're looking for that one season where they can just cement a place, stay up in the Premier League, and then build from there. Doesn't look like it's going to be this season, but I think that they will not be too worried about that, because they'll say, well, we can go down next season and we'll be back the following season, and maybe that will be our year as well. So yeah, I think it's a funny one, because I think a lot of fans now sort of look at clubs who do that and they sort of think, well, I wouldn't want that to be my club, but that is the reality for a club like Norwich City. And yeah, I think if it works out for them, then no one will be laughing in a couple of seasons' time.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point that you guys are making about the kind of coming up and down. And we have talked before with some people that said they wouldn't mind being down a year just so they could see their team win and then come back up. I wanted to kind of follow up on that thought, though, which is with parachute payments and with the continued lack of financial equality in the different leagues, do you think, like you already mentioned, two sides that have done it a lot recently in West Brom and Norwich, Swansea were in that group for a while. You mentioned Crystal Palace a little bit earlier, but do you feel like we're going to just keep cycling through the same five teams now as like the teams get their parachute payments, which is enough to dominate the Championship, just come back up, they're not good enough for the Premier League, and then just keep interchanging?
I mean, that's an interesting point, because you know, got Brentford up this year for the first time in the Premier League. So, yeah, you know, they're a new face. It's always good to have a new face in the Premier League. But as John will testify, the Championship is a horrible division to be in. It's hard to get out of. And fair play for the likes of Norwich, West Brom and Fulham for doing what they've done. And, you know, maybe they're a bit yo-yo clubs, but actually continuing to do it. You know, it's just as hard to get out of Championship as it is to stay in the Premier League. Let's face it, it's not an easy division. It's 24 teams, it's 46 games a season, it's games most, you know, two games most weeks. It's a horrible division, and it's a very competitive division, probably one of the most competitive in the world, I would say, to be quite honest. And that's what makes it attractive to watch as a neutral, I would say, because I'd hate for Palace to be back in that. I really would. But just in terms of parachute payments, yeah, there's an element to that. You do wonder, you know, how long that can go on for, because it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because teams do have to stretch themselves to try and survive in a Premier League, but you know, the money that's available to them, you know, for a whole season, I mean, I think it's something ridiculous. I think the last count was 100 million, isn't it, for finishing bottom of the Premier League, something like that. And then you've got the parachute payments for three or four seasons after that. It may well have changed since the last time I looked, but you know, that's still a lot of money. So you know, I think Norwich are a good sort of yardstick for how they manage their club. Like John said, they do a very good job with that, and they, you know, they don't stretch themselves in a way like somebody like Sunderland have done in the past. And, you know, look at the state Sunderland are in now. So, you know, it's all about managing the finances and managing your capabilities and not stretching yourselves too far. I mean, I think it's a challenge for all of the other 14 clubs in the Premier League, as they are, because Palace are in a very difficult position at the moment, because you want to strive to make that next step. But as we've seen before by the teams that have gone before us, you try and make that next step to kind of try and challenge for a top 10 spot each season, or maybe even push for a top 7 spot and maybe a European campaign, you know, every once in a while. But, you know, likes of Sunderland and Stoke stretch themselves and, you know, they've just disappeared out of sight, you know, Sunderland more so. So, you know, you don't want your club to be in that position. But I've got a lot of, you know, I value what the likes of Norwich, Fulham and West Brom have done, because they've, you know, what their models are doing the right thing. Yes, they change managers. Yes, they change players. But, you know, it's been relatively successful. But the unfortunate thing is not many teams have been able to make it stick in the Premier League, which is difficult. I do think the parachute payments do lend themselves to seeing the majority of the same kind of teams coming back each time. But, you know, we've just seen Brentford come up for the first time in God knows how long, and they've been knocking on the door for a fair while. Other teams have been in and around, you know, Championship to try and get back into the Premier League. And it's nice to see new faces, but, you know, I think the majority of those sides will be the same ones bouncing back every season or every couple of seasons because of, you know, the amount of money that's involved.
Yeah, interesting to hear you talking at the beginning of in asking the question about the inequalities in football, because far be it from me to defend the Premier League and when the charge of inequality is thrown at it, because it obviously isn't an unequal league, but actually compared to a lot of the other divisions in around Europe, the reason why I think we're seeing this phenomenon happening is precisely because that money is being shared down the pyramid a little bit to a certain extent. And what we're seeing is that there are clubs outside of the top 20 of English football now who are enjoying that money coming through to them. So it's an interesting one for me, because what happens is that if you outgrow your league in that sense, you know, you've got more clubs than you can necessarily cater for in your division, then you are going to end up with a situation where you'll end up with five clubs who are going to be going up and down relative stages. So I think this is actually a phenomenon caused by the amount of money that there is in the Premier League. Not to say there isn't any inequality, but I think that's probably a good situation to be in, because you know that you're going to have clubs now coming up who are having to think carefully about what it is that they do, because they do have a chance of, if they think smart about the way that they're going to approach the division, they will have a chance of actually staying up for a few seasons, and so you'll see clubs actually improving in the long run. So yeah, I think there's definitely a positive angle to this as well.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. It made me think some of what Huddersfield and I think I want to say Cardiff at the time did, which was largely by Championship players, so that if you stay up, cool, but if you go back down, you still have that strength if you've now bought some of the better Championship players and you'd stand a better chance again the following year. Didn't actually work in either of those two examples, but it is definitely an interesting thing to think about. Cycling just back to Norwich in particular here at the back end, too early to panic, or should people already be a little bit worried about their status come the end of the year?
Good question. I think there'd be an element of panic, but I think we go back to the fixtures. They've been unlucky at the fixtures, and I think it will kind of work itself out as the season goes on. There is a lot to be said for that, how the schedule works out, because it's clearly not their confidence big time after, you know, a couple of beatings, minus 12 goal difference, I think you said, Kev. That is tough. You know, for Norwich, I think it's a free hit. You know, they would want to survive as fans, but it's, you know, getting to the end of the season. If you stay up by goal difference or just by a point, then it's great. You know, it's a great feeling. But if you're going to go down by, you know, if you're down by, you know, start of March or end of March, whatever it is, then, you know, it's disappointing. So maybe that model with Farker in charge hasn't worked as well as they hoped, and they might have to look at a change. But at the moment, yeah, I think I'd be a little bit worried as a Norwich fan, but actually probably not a lot they'd have expected any better at this point after that run of fixtures. So I think the next few games are quite critical for them.
Yeah, I think that Norwich are gone, to be honest with you. Maybe it's a bit early to say that, but I don't really see them being able to turn it around and get out of the bottom three. Maybe they will not finish dead bottom, but I think that's just the reality of what we've been talking about. And I suppose for them the frustration is that it's felt as though, as you said at the top of this section, they've brought in a lot of sort of interesting players from around the continent that you might have thought would allow them to kick on, but whether or not there's going to be panic there, I don't know. But I don't think that they will be panicking. I think they'll just say, well, we expected this, and if we go down, we come back up. So, yeah, it's a funny one. I'm not feeling particularly hopeful about Norwich, but and that's, I think, largely because there just doesn't seem to be any quote unquote bad teams in the division this time around. I mean, even teams like Newcastle, who you might expect to be the whipping boys in this division, they've got good players. They have a squad of players that you know, on their day can compete, not with everyone in the division, but certainly with the teams that they need to be able to compete with. And so I just don't think that there's going to be a huge amount of wiggle room really for clubs to get out of it. And even at this point with Norwich just not picking up points, I think it's going to be really tough for them to get out.
Yeah, time will certainly tell, but I do agree. It feels like by the time they get warmed up, so will everyone else, and then they'll just kind of be stuck down there for a bit. Though it should be noted that, you know, Burnley are there with 1 point. I think a win would take them out of the bottom three, but yeah, definitely not promising signs thus far from Norwich. I wanted to move on next to talk a little bit about managers. So in particular, Pep Guardiola this week has had a bit of a war of words with his own fan base, and I think it's the head of their supporters group in particular that he was asked to apologize to by the media in his press conference, which he politely declined. And I was just curious your guys' thoughts on this kind of antagonistic relationship between those two. It seems to also be happening with Bruce and Newcastle at the moment, but specifically at City, somebody that's won as much as Pep Guardiola has. Basically, ever since the Kane transfer didn't go through, he's been a little on edge in his press conferences.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Pep. He's a great coach. He's done a great job for City since he's come in. But, you know, this kind of thing, I think you've got to be careful what you say to football fans, because, you know, the last 18 months hasn't been a joke, has it? Let's face it. A lot of people have suffered through different reasons. But obviously, you know, we've all got a connection here in terms of what's happened in the last 18 months. He should know a bit better. You know, I'm not being critical of him, but I think you just need to be very careful about what you say. You know, a lot of people lost their jobs, you know, haven't made, you know, had the income that they would normally have had. You know, football isn't cheap. You know, we know it's not cheap. You know, we travel up and down the country week in, week out. Well, I mean, obviously only recently week in, week out, but it's not cheap and it's not easy to follow football. We do it because we follow our teams. We love following our teams, and it's what we do. But, you know, I think he has to be very careful about what he says, because footballers are paid a lot of money. Managers are paid a lot of money. Man City have a lot of money. But actually, to be saying we want more fans at grounds, yeah, I get the point. I get a sentiment. But actually, at the moment, after what we've just all been through, I think that's, yeah, I think you're standing on thin ice a little bit there with the fan groups and the fans. I think you just got to be a bit careful, you know, just in terms of, you know, relationships with managers and clubs. I can, you know, I could speak from our perspective at Palace. I mean, obviously we haven't really got to know Vieira an awful lot. We don't really know what he's going to do, you know, ahead of a game at the moment. We haven't really got used to his ways and stuff like that. But actually, the fan groups at Palace have a very good relationship with the club. They really have. I mean, there's a lot that's been said about the homestyle fanatics and how things are organised within the club and how they sit and where they sit at grounds and both home and away. And it's always been it's always been a very smooth transition in terms of communication between the club and the fans. So it's always been pretty healthy over the last 10-15 years, which has obviously seen us, you know, one of those fan bases that are quite vociferous at grounds, because you know, the club support the fans and do a lot for fans. Yes, you know, no club is perfect. There are things that, you know, probably should have been done differently and stuff like that, and that will always happen between, you know, particularly clubs in the Premier League, but I suppose you could say the same for clubs in other divisions as well. So yeah, I mean, overall I think Pep's got to be very careful about what he says, because, you know, it's been a rubbish past couple of years, and, you know, a lot of people may not have the finances they used to have, you know, going into a new season when we're allowed to go back to football. And yeah, I think it's a little bit dodgy ground that he's talking about there, concentrating on the football.
It's ironic, isn't it, when you look at the timeline of this, that what happened was that Pep Guardiola came out of a Champions League fixture where they didn't fill the stadium and said, we've got a big game at the weekend, please turn up, it's going to be a difficult one. And then they didn't end up winning that game after all of this. It ended up being a difficult game. I think this is largely a lost in translation situation. I think, as I've said, the timeline there, Manchester City have a history of their loyal fan base not really having a great amount of time for UEFA for various reasons. And so they do struggle to sell out the stadium on Champions League, particularly group stage games. And I suspect that Guardiola was simply saying, you know, this is a big game at the weekend, and it would be good to see the stadium full. I suppose that, as you've been saying, Jay, that it can be misconstrued, and you have to be very careful about how you say these things. I would say that the context given in recent press conferences has been that he has made similar comments at other clubs that he's been at as well. And also that, you know, other clubs that he's been at, I mean, I was reading a Twitter thread, I think, the other day about his time when he was at Barcelona with arguably one of the greatest football teams, at least the football team that at the time was one of the best in the world that we'd ever seen. And they were struggling to fill the stadium out there. And he made similar comments there to the fans about filling stadiums. But yeah, I suppose the irony is, again, that this is a problem that is caused by the professionalisation of football that we've seen in recent years, right? The hyper-capitalisation of football, and Pep Guardiola is almost at the forefront of that, right? This whole idea that you can get the manager who can bring together the best players in the world and produce really scintillating football out of them. The problem is that has come at a cost, and that cost is that the ticket prices have risen, the amount of money that is being paid to footballers has risen, and it's pricing a lot of people out of the market. And so, yeah, I'm with Jay as well in that sense that you live by the sword, you die by the sword. If you create this footballing reality whereby everything becomes just hyperinflated, then you are going to face issues about how do you get just local fans in, how do you fill stadia, how do you fill the seats with people who aren't just VIPs or people who are doing tourism around stadiums. It's a really tricky situation to be in. So I think with all of that context in place, though, I do think Guardiola is probably making a fair point, and it may have just been a little bit of lost in translation here.
Mm. And we shouldn't have assumed we knew what he meant, because he got pretty upset about that in his pre-match press conference as well. And I do appreciate the long-term context. Didn't realize that it was also happening at Barcelona. And it does seem like this is like an ongoing issue at City in particular. I don't know if you guys saw that post where they were like trying to get influencers in to talk about how great the match day experience was and how it wasn't actually as empty as people thought it was. They're just like, guys, I don't know what the solution is. I am not bright enough to know what the long-term solution is to this particular issue, but I know everything that they're doing thus far seems to be wrong, which is a much easier form of critique. But hopefully they can...
To be honest, Kev, but one thing they could do is lower the prices.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, it's not rocket science, is it? If you're struggling to get people in the door, it might hit your pocket a little bit, but come on, football's not had fans for, you know, God knows how long. So,
especially when they're so institutionally insecure about this particular issue.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I just think, the club could, football clubs could give something back, considering, what these clubs have put us through over the last. And I'm referring to, the Super League and stuff like that. It's, these clubs could give their fans something back and actually, do much cheaper tickets. I'm not saying forever. I'm just saying for a period of time. If they want fans back in the grounds, they've got to understand the reality of the situation that a lot of people have been through, and a lot of people, like I said, a lot of people have been hit financially, and I'm sure a lot of fans would want to go and watch City play football. A lot of City fans would want to go, but priced out of the market. Football has got to that point now where it's gonna end up eating itself. And I think, the last 18 months has been a real reality check for it. They could lose a lot. I mean, financially, some of the top clubs in the Premier League have suffered through it, and that's you'd never have thought that for something that's hit us. So I think there is a real reality check there, and there was only one reason the European Super League caught their eye, was because it meant that they could get some money. And a lot of these clubs in the Premier League have suffered more surprisingly than a lot of people would have thought. So if they want more fans in the grounds, cut the prices. It may not make sense, in the long term, but for the short term, if they want fans there and it is actually something they have an issue with, then give away some tickets or make them cheaper. I know it's not rocket science to me, but
I'm just looking at the home attendances for Manchester City this season. And I think the issue is clearly that they're filling the stadium. Like when it's a Premier League game, they're getting over 50,000 for every game. Mm. So 51,000 Norwich, 52,000 Arsenal, 52,000 Southampton. And then you look at the RB Leipzig game.
If memory serves.
Yeah, so it's like pretty much full, I guess. I don't know even if it's slightly reduced because of COVID regulations as well. But it's when you look at the Champions League thing, it's RB Leipzig 38,000. I think they are offering those tickets. I live fairly close to Manchester, and I've been to loads of Champions League games because friends will say, oh, I've picked up cheap tickets just a couple of days before. Do you want to go along? So I think so much of this just comes back to the fact that the Manchester City fans have, I suppose, a history of not liking UEFA because of the various FFP things that have happened. Mm. And the Champions League is considered a plastic competition by the quote unquote true Manchester City fans, whatever you make of that scare quote. But yeah, I do think that, you know, that I don't think for the sake of what 1500 seats, if they're not selling out, that they're going to reduce the prices. I don't think this is about necessarily filling the stadium for Premier League games. I think it's simply about the frustration for Pep that City are essentially a club who are trying to win the Champions League, and yet their fan base don't seem particularly bothered by that, especially in the group stages.
Yeah, definitely interesting to hear that they are basically doing it already, which makes their efforts to fill it all the weirder if they're already basically doing it. But as you say, maybe it was just to try to get people there for Champions League matches.
Do you think it's an atmosphere thing as well, though?
Yeah, because probably.
It is quite a poor atmosphere at times in the City Ground. It may be, again, that I've been to mainly Champions League fixtures where they've been selling cheap tickets, and so it's a lot of people doing what I'm doing, which is just going along to have the chance to see a good European side. But as I read it, it's just sort of Pep Guardiola saying, come on, let's get fill the stadium and make some noise. And I think people are getting offended by that fact, which, yeah, maybe he should have said it in a better way. Maybe he shouldn't have said it at all. But I do think that's probably what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think those are all excellent points. Jay, you touched on the relationship between Vieira and the Palace fans already, obviously not too far into that tenure, but from you, and then once we get to you, John, to talk a little bit about Bielsa, what is the relationship like between the manager and the fans there, especially since we've been talking about how there are some other clubs where it's not so great at the moment?
Yeah, well, it's early days with Vieira, isn't it? But he's said all the right things, he's done all the right things, he's talked very highly of the fans. He's had the first home game against Brentford, which, you know, the fans are very loud and vociferous and cheering his name and that kind of thing. So, you know, he knows he has the full support of the fans, and the atmosphere at the Spurs game last weekend was just actually off the scale. I mean, obviously the result helped, of course, but actually those are the first three goals we've seen at home for, you know, since we've been back to football. So, you know, there's a lot of outpouring of emotion of, you know, actually seeing live football goals and that kind of thing. But actually the atmosphere that day was absolutely electric, and Vieira, like I say, he's doing and saying the right thing. It's difficult to answer that really because it is very early days, but you know, he's one of these players that knows the Premier League. He's, you know, he played in the Premier League for years with Arsenal, and he's been to most of the grounds, and he knows, you know, knows most of the teams. Yes, he's not managed before in this country, but you know, he knows the deal. He knows how the fans are. He knows how the Premier League works. So, you know, he's not a fool by any stretch of imagination, but I think we just need to get to know him a bit better. Early signs are very good. You know, he's a very fan-focused kind of guy. He said exactly the right things, and even after the Liverpool game yesterday, he was very critical of exactly the same things that the Palace fans are critical of. So it's quite refreshing in a way that we now have a manager who is calling things out. Yes, he's a bit raw because he's a young manager in comparison to a lot of others, but you know, maybe he'll learn from that and bite his tongue a little bit more. But actually, it's been quite refreshing after the last 4 years we've had, and no offense to Roy, he did a great job for us and helped keep us in the position we are. But actually going to somebody a bit different and new ideas and saying different things, it's so far it's been good. And only time will tell as the season goes on, really, and as we get to learn more about Vieira and his ways and that kind of stuff as a manager, because it's very young on that side of things. And the same in the other way. I think there's a lot of positivity around the club at the moment, just the way that things have happened and the transition. You know, fans appreciate what's actually happening at the club and can see that things are changing an awful lot from, you know, from the last few seasons under Roy. So I think Vieira's bought a lot of time because of that. You know, we can see things happening. So yeah, I think it works both ways every time. You mentioned there, Kev, that there's a lot of friction in other clubs, but I think, you know, the friction is caused by it's not always a manager. You know, if it is between a manager and the fans, then, you know, the club have something to do with it as well, which I think you pointed out, like so Newcastle. Yeah, there's obviously history there and that kind of stuff. But I'm just glad that we're, you know, Palace are quite healthy on that front, you know, this season, albeit we still need to get to know Vieira. He still needs to get to know us. But actually, the early signs are very good.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing how much of this has got to do with the way that the fans respond to the manager's performances. Because obviously at Leeds, after the last three seasons, I would have said that Marcelo Bielsa could do no wrong in the eyes of the fans. But we're, what, five games into this season, and there are already rumblings about Bielsa. I think a lot of this comes down to the fact that the off-pitch stuff becomes very difficult when you have Bielsa, and we're in a situation where we've definitely needed to make signings this summer, but he just doesn't seem that interested in anyone who isn't Conor Gallagher or Dan James. And I guess that's fine, but we are in a situation now where he's been at the club for three seasons. He's never been at a club for more than two seasons before this. And so we're sort of we're not in Kansas Toto anymore territory. So with Bielsa. And so I feel as though the issue now is that we're really getting to see firsthand what happens after 3 years of Bielsa ball. And the worrying thing for Leeds fans, I think, is that five games in, we're not really seeing any signs that the sort of scintillating football we saw last season is going to be repeatable this season. So I'm sure we are going to see Bielsa have a little bit of a wobble with the fans, but obviously there's so much credit in the bank from him. He's a great manager to have as a fan, because he does talk very well about the fans. He realizes his responsibility to the fans, and we'll talk about the fact that football is about entertainment at the end of the day. And there's the famous story of when he had first arrived at Leeds, taking the players out litter picking for a certain amount of hours to make them realise what the fans go through in order to be able to afford a ticket to come and watch them play, just to instill in them the seriousness of what it is that they are doing and their responsibility before the fans. So, yeah, no complaints whatsoever from that front. Yeah, I think he says all the right things. He knows that football is for the fans. Although along the way there have been some little glitches here and there, namely with Kiko Kassir, but that's another topic for another podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know if it will, but it certainly could be. All right, we'll kind of just flow from there into your manager's or general club's philosophy towards the cups. Obviously, Jay, I know no longer in the Carabao Cup already, but sorry about that.
That explains everything, doesn't it?
You know what? It just might. But yeah, I was just curious what the kind of institutional thinking on the cups versus the domestic competitions is.
Yeah, interesting one. I mean, under Roy, you know, it always felt like there wasn't really a lot of interest in the cup competitions, particularly at the early stages. But I think you could say the same for most Premier League sides in the early stages, you know, put out weekend sides, but it's an opportunity to play fringe players, you know, or see fringe players, because you haven't had the opportunity to play them in the Premier League yet. You don't have as many games in the Premier League as you do, you know, the rest of the football league. So there is an element of that. I mean, this season, you know, it's hard to decide under Vieira because it's such early days. Came in the summer. He played quite a strong side against Watford in that cup game, actually, in the League Cup. But we did end up losing to them very narrowly, and a bit of a rubbish tie for the first round, to be quite honest. Another Premier League side, you always kind of groan when that happens. You just want a lower league side that you've not played before or for some time. So, you know, unlucky with a draw, but, you know, we didn't put in the performance that was expected of us. And again, early days in the Vieira era, really, as it still is. So time will tell with the FA Cup when that comes round in January, whether that is the cup, isn't it, really? I mean, it's, you know, I think as fans, maybe some fans are different. You know, any cup is worth winning, but I think a lot of the time League Cup kind of becomes a hindrance, and you wonder why it's even on the calendar sometimes with the questions around how much football's being played. Yeah, I'm sure if we'd have won it, I'd be talking very differently, but it just seems a fair amount of hindrance. And yeah, we're out of it this season, so maybe that's why I'm saying this. But FA Cup's a little bit different. History behind it. Palace have had, you know, we got to the final a couple of times in my lifetime supporting the club. So I know the feelings around that and what that creates around the club. So I'd love us to have an FA Cup run for sure. But on the flip side, you know, there is an element of fear because as a Premier League side who, you know, you don't know whether you're going to survive each season, you know, whether an FA Cup run will hinder you. So the Premier League is a bread and butter, let's face it. And there's a massive kind of, you know, thought process there as to which way we go. You know, if you're lucky with a draw, you know, maybe you can get to that stage and then take it seriously. But yeah, I'm interested to see what Vieira decides to do as the season goes on and kind of what position we're sitting at come the end of the year when the draw for the third round's taken. But yeah, we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, well, under Marcelo Bielsa, first three seasons under him, we only, I think, won three games in knockout competition. So you can make of that what you will. This time around, we've actually seen Leeds play a fairly strong team in the first Carabao fixture against Crewe Alexandra, which we run quite comfortably. But we're playing Fulham this midweek and we don't have enough players available. And so it will be a weakened team, even if he didn't want it to be. So, yeah, it will be fascinating to see what the Cups do this time around. I think there's been too much frustration amongst Leeds fans that we just sort of throw on seven or eight under-23s players and then are surprised that it doesn't look pretty. We had an FA Cup exit last season to Crawley, which was particularly egregious in that respect. But this time around, yeah, he does seem to be putting out stronger players. Maybe he will be trying to get a stronger team out as he can on Tuesday because he wants to Leeds to pick up a first win of the season and get some momentum. So I'm kind of fascinated to see what the approach to the Cups is. It's fascinating as well, given that we've come from the Championship where you just have huge amounts of fixture pile-ups, to then come into the Premier League last season and then not really take the Cup competitions that seriously, despite the fact I think we played something like 12 or 14 fewer games last season than we did the previous season because there's just so many fewer games than when you're playing in the Championship. So I will be fascinated to see whether or not we actually take one of the Cups seriously this time around. But yeah, I'm not holding out much hope, given that I think when it comes around to it, we've got a weakened team this week against Fulham, who I think will probably rotate quite a bit as well. So maybe we will get through that. But when it comes around to the FA Cup, it will depend where we are in the table. And I think if we are struggling in the bottom half of the table, we may not be too keen to put out the strongest side in the FA Cup when that finally rolls around as well. So yeah, watch this space, but we are definitely seeing something slightly different this season from what we've seen in the first few.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point because I would think if you were struggling in the league, you'd actually want to focus more on the Cups just to bring a bit more fan joy. But yeah, if you're doing poorly enough, then you're in the relegation fight maybe a little bit less so. But we can talk about Leeds' start here in a little bit. But for now, we'll take a break and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and we are back. Jay, we'll start off with you talking a little bit about Crystal Palace. We had you on first show of the season, if memory serves, and we were talking about how difficult your start to the year was. Well, I think you've done pretty well. Definitely may have beaten a team from North London. I don't really recall in particular, but we talked about the good signings. We talked about Edouard being a fantastic one that could really push you on. Things going very well for Vieira at the moment.
Yeah, he's, you know, I mean, Palace fans have actually, you know, understood the fact that this is a season of transition, as it were, because Vieira is very different, as I alluded to in that first podcast, to the management that we've appointed in the past. You know, very, very different, you know, to Roy, Sam Allardyce, Alan Pardew, Tony Pulis. It's a very new direction. Yes, we had a bit of a you know, fumble around with Frank de Boer, but that didn't last very long. And this feels very different, to be fair. The media were very interested in comparing the two, but this feels very different. I mean, Vieira's come in and, yeah, we started the season pretty well considering the fixtures that we had. You know, always tough to start at Chelsea, Champions League winners, their first game at home after winning the Champions League. Yeah, it's going to be tough for any side, isn't it? And as we've already, we were talking off air that, you know, Chelsea looked to be, you know, the side that looked to want to win the title this year and have every chance of doing so. So, you know, that was always going to be tough. But actually going to the games afterwards, Brentford, newly promoted side, always tough to face a new promoted side. That was our first home game. Goalless draw, gets a point on the board. You know, we should have probably won it, but it got a point on the board for Vieira. And actually, even in those two games, you know, the first half against Chelsea was a little bit of a write-off. We didn't have the same 11 in that first game than we have since. So that probably says an awful lot about the way manner in which we've improved against Brentford. We brought in the likes of Anderson at centre-back to partner Gay, who we got from Chelsea. And they've both looked superb at the back, you know, against Spurs. Sorry, Kev. Well, I'm not sorry. Against Spurs last weekend, you know, they were absolutely brilliant. I think the biggest stat and the biggest pat on the back you can give them is the fact that Harry Kane didn't have a touch in our penalty box or have a shot on goal. And that's the first time it's ever happened to Harry Kane in the Premier League. So I think, you know, that just shows you how well Anderson and Gay played together in that game last weekend. A little bit different against Liverpool, going up to Liverpool, but actually, you know, I didn't feel disappointed to lose 3-0 yesterday. It was a scoreline that flattered Liverpool. It really did, because we made a couple of stupid mistakes at set pieces late in the game. And Klopp actually said after the game, you know, that was a tough 3-0 win. And that probably says a lot about the way that we played the game. We had chances in that game. And I think all Palace fans wanted to see from a Palace side after the last few seasons is actually going to places like Anfield and competing, not going up there to try and not to lose. And it's two very different things. I mean, we hit the post in the first 5 minutes twice against Liverpool yesterday at Anfield. And that probably says an awful lot about the way Patrick Vieira is trying to get Palace to play football. And this group of players particularly are a very exciting bunch of players. I already mentioned the two centre-backs, Conor Gallagher in the midfield, up and down the whole game, a really astute loan signing. And after Ruben Loftus-Cheek, I think a lot of Palace fans actively said on social media, not going to fall in love with another loan signing again after, you know, Loftus-Cheek went back to Chelsea and obviously kind of disappeared off the face of the earth a little bit, hasn't he? But Conor Gallagher, after three or four games in, it's happening again. You know, he's just absolute superstar in the midfield, full of energy, scores goals, just exactly what we needed. And, you know, a lot of Palace fans have said already, you know, go to Steve Parish and say, Chelsea, how much do you want for this player? But, you know, he wants to play for Chelsea. He's already come out and said that. So it's a fair play to him. So we enjoy him for the season, you know, as we should. Elsewhere, Edouard, I mean, great signing, scored the two goals against Spurs last weekend off the bench. And then came on yesterday against Liverpool and had two really good chances. And yes, he didn't score, but actually he's proved already that he's a player that, you know, he's got the license to roam around that box and actually be in that position to be on the end of things. So that's really promising as well. So yeah, I disappointed to lose yesterday against Liverpool. It says a lot actually, because you know, a lot of time us fans in outside the top six think some of these games are free hits going to places like Anfield and the Etihad and Old Trafford. But actually that's all Palace fans wanted. We want a team to be able to compete away from home against these big sides. And if we get something great, you know, yesterday was a lot about, yeah, we went 1-0 down, should have had a penalty for a trip on Benteke, you know, swings and roundabouts really, isn't it? Sometimes another day you get a decision, other times you don't. Well, very rarely at Anfield, but yeah, it's another story. And it could have been quite different, you know, in that game had that penalty been given. A few other decisions elsewhere went against us, probably didn't get a fair run of the green, and we end up losing 3-0. But, you know, I'd rather lose 3-0 going for it, trying to get back in the game, than actually losing 1-0 and holding on to that 1-0 loss, which is what we would have tried to have done under previous managers. So I think there's a lot of excitement around Palace. There's still a lot of nervousness as well. But actually, you're right, Kev. It's been a good start to season considering the fixture list we've had. You know, we've gone to Chelsea, we've gone to Anfield, and we're sitting here with 5 points after five games. I think that's a really good return for a new manager to the Premier League, and we're playing football. You know, that's the biggest thing about it. And we've still got the likes of Eze and Elise really to come into the side,
which
is even more exciting. So yeah, we're still a little bit nervous about how the season could pan out, but actually we've showed an awful lot so far about how Vieira wants us to play the game, how we're playing football, possession based, and it's actually been really good to watch. I think I said it last week actually I think I said it online actually, that watching Palace's game last week, I mean, I've enjoyed Palace winning games, I've enjoyed results for Palace over the last few years, but actually enjoying a performance, sorry, Kev, against Spurs that we did last week, I haven't enjoyed a Palace performance like that for quite some time. And that probably says an awful lot about where Vieira is trying to take us, which is really good.
Yeah. You were one of the several clubs that during that match, there was commentary at the Denver Spurs bar that we hadn't been the best looking team in any of the games we'd played thus far, which... not very good news for us, but I do agree you looked really good in that one as well. You mentioned Edouard, obviously didn't start either of the two matches, but obviously came on as a very high-impact sub against us, and then slightly less so against Liverpool, although, as you said, I don't think the scoreline flattered you, although the XG was similar to the scoreline, which was very surprising given, like you said, the two early chances that you had, and you had a few more throughout. But when do you think Edouard will be just like a stapled name in the 11, or do you think you're more willing to just kind of like work him in, as Benteke obviously brings something to his game that you probably aren't going to get out of Edouard?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of time. It wouldn't surprise me if he starts against Brighton a week Monday in the derby game, because he's a goal scorer. He's a natural goal scorer. He gets into those positions like he did. I mean, he was on for what was he on for? 20 minutes against Liverpool, and he had two really good chances because he was in the right. Yeah, in the right place. You know, Benteke doesn't quite get into those positions. He kind of holds himself back, waiting for the cross to head the ball. Edouard's completely different. So I think to give us a bit of a fighting chance, you know, you've got to switch players around like that. You know, Benteke had a really good second half of last season, scored goals, but actually, again, this season we're not giving him the right service. You know, you need to put a ball in his head, and we're not doing that. We don't have any out and out wingers as such. Wilf wants to play more of a central role as he did last season, but actually he has played more out wide. But he's a player that works the ball into the box a lot of the time rather than actually getting across him. And we don't have anybody out on the right unless we switch up IU for Elise, which I think is going to happen as well, because Elise's had two cameos, one against Spurs, one against Liverpool yesterday. What did he have, about 10 minutes yesterday again as well, and looked very good. You know, he was the young player in the Championship last season, and we got him for like 8 million, which seems an absolute steal. And of course, Eze to come into the side as well, which I said, you know, very exciting. But yeah, Edouard, it wouldn't surprise me if Vieira went and switched it up and switched Benteke for Edouard in that game against Brighton. But on the flip side, Benteke knows what this game means to us. You know, he scored in the game last season. He scored that 95th minute winner against Brighton last season, so he knows exactly what this game means to the fans. So he might hold off for another game, perhaps, I don't know, but I think it's only a matter of time before Edouard comes into the starting lineup and has a full game as the lone striker. And Elise as well, very similar. He'll probably replace Ayew, because Ayew, I mean, he works hard, but I think yesterday he had a shot from distance, and Wilf was free out on the left hand side screaming for the ball. So he doesn't make the best decisions, unfortunately. But you can't knock his work rate. But I think Elise will give us so much more creativity out on that wide, you know, out on the right. Whether it's Benteke in the middle or Edouard, I think, you know, he will provide a lot more ammunition in there. So yeah, matter of time. I think Edouard gets match fit properly for a full 90 minutes, and he'll be in.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure every neutral is looking forward to that, because him and Gallagher and Elise once he gets back, and which I assume is going to be after the turn of the year. But you got some exciting players there. And after the exodus of the aged ones in the summer, I think all of a sudden Palace are looking like a pretty exciting side. Coming to you now, John, to talk a little bit about Leeds, maybe less of an exciting start to the year. You already mentioned, you know, the swashbuckling play style from last year, not really living up to it just yet. Currently a bottom three defense in the league as well. Do you think you think this is more of an internal Leeds thing? You aren't just being able to reach the heights that you did last season? Or do you think that opposing teams have a little bit of a better plan of how to deal with Bielsa and how you were playing last year?
I think it's a bit of both. You say we have a bottom three of the league defence, but we pretty much had a bottom three of the league defence last season. In fact, in terms of XGA, I'm pretty sure we were in the bottom three. The difference between us and the other teams around us in that table is that we had, you know, we were a top five XG team, so we're putting up huge amounts of XG. Now, that's the Bielsa way. You risk conceding goals by going to try and score them, and that's all well and good last season when you're scoring the goals that you the chances that you create, and you don't concede the chances that you concede, but that's not happening as much this time around this season. Now, it's not just variance though that we're seeing. I do think there's an element to what you're saying about opposition sides having a chance to see what Leeds are up to and working out ways to counter that. And I think both Everton and Burnley were unlucky not to beat us in those two games we picked up points from, because they realised that so much of what we need to do is get the ball quickly into wide areas to our attacking players. And if you can do that, then we will generate chances. And they were able to sit a little bit deeper. They set their fullbacks. They pressed us quite considerably in wide areas. And it just really hampers our attack. And so I think we'll see smart clubs, smart managers doing similar things. I think there will be a level, obviously, at which there are top four teams who have the attacking capacity to just turn us over, as we've seen with Liverpool and Manchester United so far as well, doing that. But I think the majority of teams outside of that crop of elite clubs will just do that. They will sit deep. They won't leave space in behind fullbacks for Leeds to attack. And I think doing that will mean that Leeds will spend a lot of time labouring away to get there. So that's a very negative assessment. I do think that we will be roughly fine. I just think that we've variance down compared to last season. And also, yeah, I think that there are sort of internal issues that I touched on before. Namely, we don't have really the sort of squad available to us to really kick on this time around. So it's a case of just, yeah, enjoying, I think, what will be a fairly miserable season at times for Leeds, but it will be enough to stay up. And I suppose at this point, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think you fall, even though it's early, into that very nice group of there are at least three worst teams. So yeah, I agree. Yeah. I don't think you're really in significant danger there. Not to mimic too much what I was just talking to Jay about, but you mentioned earlier, obviously, the signing of Dan James being basically the main signing this summer. And I was very curious about that because you spent a fair chunk of money on him, but his two best positions are already filled by two of your better players in Rafinha, and I personally rate Jack Harrison highly, potentially because he was the number one MLS draft pick back when that happened. But I was just curious how you're planning on getting Dan James into the starting 11 regularly, which one would assume you would try to do given the price tag.
Yeah, I mean, don't talk to me about the Dan James signing. You know, it's just another example of the lack of joined up thinking that we've seen at Leeds this summer. When you come out of the last season with a top half finish, everything going well for you, you would think that a little bit of smart thinking about the trajectory of the squad would have been in order. It would have been good to bring some players through, maybe even some young players who you could blood this season and then have them ready for the following season when we know we're going to have to move on maybe four or five players. None of that's really happened. We brought in Junior Firpo at left back because we needed to, because we sold our only left back. And just an example of the lack of depth we had, that when you go down from Junior Firpo, who is our only specialist left back, you have Stuart Dallas, who fills in everywhere for us at the moment. So this season has played in centre midfield and right back and left back. So you've got a player covering who is covering a lot of different positions. And then beyond that, you're then going down to the under 18s. You're skipping the under 23s entirely. We don't have an under 23s left back. So that's the sort of this sort of squad depth that we're working with in certain areas. We've spent the last three seasons trying to bring in a central midfielder. Haven't brought one in. Tried to get Conor Gallagher. Obviously, there's been a lot of effusive praise for Conor Gallagher, and rightly so. I am a very big fan and was desperate for us to get him. That never transpired. Season before, we nearly got Mikael Cuisance from Bayern on loan. That fell through when we were given the option of getting Rafinha.
Ooh, Rodrigo de Paul at the time would have been fantastic.
Yeah, although I'm not sure how much truth there was in that. Although, again, a lot of frustration there because we brought in Rodrigo Moreno rather than Rodrigo de Paul. And his transfer has been a bit of an interesting one for Leeds fans, and I think most Leeds fans now just think that's a failed experiment and wish that Marcelo Bielsa didn't try and fit him into our midfield every week. But yeah, we spent the sort of money that on Rodrigo that you would expect probably would have brought Rodrigo de Paul to us, and that would have solved a lot of problems for us. And the same is true with Dan James. Like you say, we filling a position that we needed a player, we needed a backup, we needed Ringo who could come on the left, I think, and invert. We didn't need to spend 25 million on a player who actually don't think adds that much to what it is that we do. I think the way that I would use Dan James if I have to would be if we are stretching teams late on in games, bring him on for the final 20 minutes, look to try and get him behind. But the sort of build up that we do in the wide areas through our attacking midfielders, our wide attackers is really quite intricate build-up play, forming triangles with the central midfielder, the fullback, and the wide player, and we're just not seeing Dan James doing anything of that. I find him a remarkable player insofar as, so he's one of the fastest players in the league, obviously, in that position, but his dribbling numbers are really poor. He doesn't dribble a lot, and when he does, he's not a very successful dribbler, so he does rely on pure pace. And I think that dribblers like that for a team like Leeds, okay, you're going to be fine if they're going to leave space open for you, but we've already talked about how opposition clubs are reducing space for Leeds in those areas. So I think he's just a really easy player to sort of mark out of games or just render useless in games as well. And I think, again, the frustration being that you spent 25 million on a player who we could have probably done without when we have huge gaps in our squad. We could have brought in a couple of players, I think, easily for that. I think we could have brought in two players better than Dan James for the price of Dan James. And I think that's the sort of frustration for a lot of Leeds fans.
Gotcha. Yeah, it certainly was an intriguing one from the outside looking in. you get an injury to one of those players, like Jack Harrison wasn't available for this one, and then boom, you got Dan James willing to just step in and take that spot. But short of injuries, yeah, I don't think he's in your best 11, which makes it a very interesting choice to spend as much as you did on him. We'll wrap up talking about players as well. Maybe we've touched on all of them already, but I wanted to talk about the players that have really hit the ground running since joining our clubs in the summer. So Jay, we'll start off with you, and if it's Edouard already, I'm sorry we talked about him.
Well, I think, you know, we'll give Edouard a bit more time. He had 8 minutes and then 20 minutes yesterday, so I would say Conor Gallagher. He's been excellent. Didn't play the first game against Chelsea because obviously that's his parent club, but he's really impressed us as Palace fans. And I think one of the bigger things was at the top after the Spurs win. Sorry to keep mentioning it, Kev, but you know, Gallagher was the last player off the pitch that day. Yeah, you sense the tone of my voice. Yeah, Conor Gallagher was the last person off the pitch that day, and with a massive grin on his face. So yeah, it says an awful lot that he's played really well since he's come in after the Chelsea game. A massive shout out to the two centre-backs, Mark Gay and Joachim Anderson. Obviously, Anderson came from Fulham, had a good season with Fulham last season, but obviously ultimately went down. But we managed to pick both of those two players up and replaced both of our centre-backs with those two. And they're ball-playing centre-backs. They just look so comfortable at the back. Yeah, we had a defeat at Anfield yesterday, but even then, you know, they weren't deterred from playing that game. And yeah, I think Gay's up there as one of the players with the most passes in the Premier League so far this season, which is a stat I was astounded with from coming from one of our centre-backs, because we're just not used to that at Palace as a centre-back. You know, it's normally a case of, I mean, you know, Mamadou Sakho used to try and pass the ball out or dribble the ball out from the back, and it never ended very well when he did make an appearance for us. So, yeah, we're not used to ball-playing centre-backs, but these two are really classy. And yeah, a big shout out to them. I mean, Conor Gallagher's been great, but those two have been, you know, almost just as good. So I think shout outs to them. Elsewhere, we haven't really seen much of everybody else. Elise's had a couple of glimpses so far, and he looks a real talent for us. As I think he's going to be as good as a season, hopefully, once he gets into the side, as Eze had for us last season. And obviously, you know, we know what Eze did for us. So yeah, Edouard, I think he's just going to, yeah, he's going to come in the side. I'll be interested to see him play for 90 minutes, really, and see what he can do from there. But promising signs already. But yeah, I think for mostly it's Gallagher, but closely followed by Gaye and Anderson.
Gotcha. And then, John, we weren't overly full of praise for Jack Harrison just then, and Junior Firpo is pretty much the only remaining choice here. So what have you made of him thus far?
Yeah, well, Junior's been out with COVID for a bit as well, so we've not seen as much of him as we would maybe have liked. And he's an interesting player. So he's a player who had a really good season for Real Betis a few seasons ago when he was playing as a wing back in their system under Quique Setién, and was that was when they were flying. And then Quique Setién goes to Barcelona, and Junior goes along with him. Doesn't really manage to break into the team because Jordi Alba exists. And yeah, so I guess the club sort of thought there was value there, that they were going to be able to bring him in fairly cheaply, which they did in the end. I think it was £13 million, €15 million. And I think in terms of, it's a funny one, in terms of what the fans are expecting, I think when you bring in a player from Barcelona like that, there's just this expectation that he's just going to be bombing on down the wing, setting people up left, right and centre. And that's definitely his strong suit. And a lot of the scouting stuff we did on him for All Stats On, we were saying, you know, this guy's really good going forward, maybe a little bit more questionable staying back. We've not actually seen him going forward that much since he's arrived. I think partly that's because he seems to sort of be a little bit nervous about going forward because he knows that he's going to have to track back, but also because Bielsa's been making him invert quite a lot, so he'll come inside rather than going outside. And now obviously that's probably because both Jack Harrison and Dan James have been playing a sort of classic wingers, sort of sitting really far out wide and not really giving him the option to overlap, so the encouragement has been for him to underlap. But he's been fine, I think. Yeah, the expectation from the fan base has been that he's going to be brilliant, and he hasn't been brilliant. And so I think for a lot of the fan base, he's been underwhelming. But I think compared to Gianni Alioski, who we've had before, he's just so much more solid in build-up. He holds the ball really well, helps us possess the ball, which is something we're struggling with. And I think in time, we'll see more of that, more ball carrying, progressive, galloping runs down the wing that I think were so attractive to us in watching his clips from previous seasons. So I think he'll be fine. I think it's just a case of at the moment him playing at a team who are struggling a little bit to possess the ball themselves, and so we're not really seeing his upside. But I think in time it'll be fine, and I think the fans will learn to appreciate the things that he does.
Certainly hope so, because, yeah, he can be excellent, as we've seen at previous clubs. That will do it for us today, though. So if you guys would like to tell folks where they could find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, thanks for listening. It's been great being back on the pod, so hopefully be back on again soon. I'm Jay. I'm founder and editor of The Eagles Beak. You can catch us on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at The Eagles Beak. And also I'm producer and host of the Marina Sports Show on 107 Marina FM, a local community radio station. So if you fancy listening to that, tune in online. And you can get us on all socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at the Meridian SS.
Yeah, and if you like the stuff that we're putting out, then you can follow me either on my personal account, which is John_McKenzie on Twitter, or follow All Stats Aren't We. And as I've said, we have a bit more of a focus on the stats and the tactics, and that's at All Stats Aren't We on Twitter.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Keveroff. You can find the show at EPL Roundtable on Twitter, and you can find it by searching EPL Roundtable just into Google or any of your podcasting apps, and you're sure to find it. And it seems as though you already have.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at yoquierodineropodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
That'll do it for us today. Thanks to you two so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure, and folks at home, we hope you keep listening.